Welcome to Dr. Robin Jackson. We are here for a session that we are calling Instructional Leadership for Remote Work, Feedback, Accountability, and Culture. And with that, Robin, I think I'll hand it over to you to share a little bit about what you're seeing as some of the needs out there in the field from instructional leaders in working with teachers in this very different way.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I am so excited to be here to talk about this. I have spent the last month, maybe last 6 weeks, talking to administrators and instructional coaches all over the world about how they are handling this crisis and really trying to work with them to figure out how do you build in the midst of crisis. So I am not interested in just helping our schools survive the crisis. I want our schools to be able to thrive in the midst of crisis. And I want to remind everybody that the decisions that we make right now are going to form habits that will be hard to break later on. So I'm really urging the folks that I'm working with to think about the decisions that you're making right now and think about the long-term consequences. So a lot of people are just kind of trying to jump in and get something done and get something out there. And they're dealing with the short-term crisis, but not dealing with the long-term consequence. So what we want to talk about today is how do you respond now to the crisis in a way that is thoughtful, and also how do you leverage the opportunities that exist right now so that your school is actually better off once we get through the crisis and you are thriving now and you're also thriving on the other side. So on the screen right now, you see something that says what teachers need. And I want to start here because before we talk about feedback and accountability and culture and even support, we really need to think about what our teachers need right now. And so there are four things that our teachers need right now. The first thing that they need is they need reassurance. They need to know that they are okay. A lot of us are dealing with our own kind of, adjustments. A lot of our teachers are mourning the fact that they won't see their children anymore this school year as states are starting to issue orders saying that the school year is shut down. Some of our teachers live alone, and so they're feeling very isolated. Some of our teachers are trying to juggle managing their own families with also trying to manage their classrooms and still give students meaningful learning experiences. Some of our teachers are struggling and grappling with their own fear. I can't tell you how many people have confided in me that they are afraid that they're going to get the virus and they're going to die. So we've got teachers who are also dealing with trauma. And in fact, teachers are dealing with both primary trauma, their own kind of fears around the virus, and they're dealing with secondary trauma because they're absorbing a lot of our students' fears around the virus and our students' uncertainty. They're worried about the kids who are going home to environments that may not be safe for those students. They're worried about kids who are facing food insecurity right now. Our teachers may also be caring for family members who are dealing with the virus, or they may be dealing with the virus themselves. So the first thing that teachers need is they need some reassurance that they are going to be okay. And they're looking to the administrators, they're looking to the builders in their lives to give them that reassurance. The second thing that the teachers need is they need confidence because our teachers are making a huge transition. In a matter of days, they went from in-person instruction to remote instruction. And some of them are really struggling with the technology. Some of them are struggling with planning. Some of them were struggling with planning before the crisis. So imagine now that we are in quarantine, they're still struggling with how to plan, how to figure things out, how to provide meaningful learning experiences. So they need confidence that, is what I'm doing okay? Is this lesson, does this lesson meet muster? Is this okay? The third thing they need is they need direction, right? Because a lot of teachers are wondering, okay, if I can't give grades and there aren't any state tests, what should I be doing? What direction should I be taking? Should I be teaching new material? Should I just review the old material? Should I expect students to show up? Are there equity issues that I should be aware of? So they need some direction around where they need to head. So if they don't get that direction, they're just throwing things up online and praying that it works. So they need some direction. And then the last thing they need is they need action. They need to know, what should I do next? And they're not just thinking about next in terms of the next few weeks. They're also thinking about what's going to happen in the fall. A lot of teachers are really worried about what I'm calling the Corona slide rather than the summer slide, because their students have been out of school for so long that a lot of teachers are saying, well, this year was a wash, and now we're going to have to make up for that next year. I don't think that's true, but a lot of teachers are worried that that's going to be the case. So what should I be doing now? And then what should I be thinking about for what's next? They're looking to us for direction and guidance around that. So anything that we do right now has to offer people the reassurance, the confidence, the direction, and the action. And if we're not offering people that, we're not meeting their needs. So that means that we're just going through the motions of our own district requirements rather than serving our teachers and setting them up to thrive now and to thrive whenever it is that we return to school and whatever our new normal is going to look like. So I want to pause here for a minute and see right now if you are seeing that, and if you see if your teachers are skewing to in one direction or another. Do you see teachers who need reassurance and confidence and direction and action? Are you seeing that play out in the way that you're interacting with your teachers? Just let me know a yes and maybe what you're seeing. Okay, so Deborah, you're asking a really good question. And so she's saying, what is your take in terms of how to provide confidence, direction, and action while supporting your admin and your district's direction? Well, if you are an aspiring administrator and you're in an assistant principal role right now, you probably have even more interaction with teachers than some others. And so there is a bigger kind of district direction, but then there are the interpersonal relationships that you have with your teachers. And so being able to translate what the district is saying in terms of what it means for what's happening in our particular school is going to be really important, because the districts are giving kind of bigger district-wide mandates. And I'm finding that the bigger the district, the more confusing the mandates. The smaller districts are much more agile. They're giving people a lot more autonomy. The bigger districts are insisting on one band, one sound. And so people are feeling hamstrung by that. But whenever the district issues guidance, the teachers are looking to you to say, what does that mean for us? And so your big role right now is interpretation, taking your district or even your principal's directives and helping teachers understand, what does it mean for my role? I believe that anybody who's working in an organization, they always have three questions. And those questions are, what is it that we're building? Why is it important? And what's my role? And so every time there's a mandate, the teachers are looking to you to say, okay, all right, what does that mean in terms of what we're building here at this school? Why is this important? And what's my role? And if you can provide answers to that, you will not only offer people reassurance, but you give them the confidence that they're able to move forward. They're not worried about things. And you give them the direction and the actions that they should take. Because once I'm clear about what we're building, why is it important, and what's my role, then I know what to trust my teachers. You know, we're going to be talking about how do you hold people accountable today? And I don't believe you hold them accountable. I think you help them be accountable. And the way that you do that is you give them very clear parameters, your vision, your mission, your core values. And then they are able to make good decisions based on that. And you don't have to chase, check, or correct or micromanage them. You empower them to make great decisions because you are constantly reinforcing, what are we building? Why is it important? And what's my role right now? Okay, let me take a look and see what else we have here. I'm going to scroll up a little bit because I saw some things getting past me. Okay, all right. I'm seeing teachers needing a lot of guidance and I'm providing feedback weekly. Yeah, I mean, I feel like this. When one of the things that I've been teaching inside of our group is that if you are communicating with teachers weekly, you need to start communicating with them daily. If you are communicating with them monthly, you need to start communicating with them weekly. You're going to have to double down on the amount of communication you have with teachers because you don't have the luxury of proximity. So teachers, if you don't communicate with them regularly, and we talk about like how do you set up those systems and structures to do that, but if you don't communicate with teachers regularly, then you leave them to their own devices. And that's why we're getting a lot of uneven implementation. That's why kids are getting, you know, if I'm in one teacher's classroom, I'd be getting one level of education. If I'm in another teacher's classroom, it's different. If you really want to have that continuity, if you really want to have that unity around instruction, and notice I didn't say uniformity, but unity around instruction, you really are going to have to ramp up how often you communicate with teachers and what you communicate with teachers about. And if you want to talk about that more, just let me know and we can do that. All right. So it says those principals that naturally do this best have a much calmer building with teachers. Other buildings have teachers seeking one of these categories, which I then need to coach the administrator to provide. Yeah, we're going to, I mean, I think that I'm seeing that the administrators who had clearly established the vision, mission, and core values prior to this, their buildings are doing a lot better because they haven't interrupted. They're not scrambling to figure things out. What they're doing is saying, okay, now that we're working remotely, how can we still deliver on our vision, mission, and core values? The principals who don't have that, they are scrambling right now because everybody's in chaos. They can't give people reassurance because they don't know what, you know, people asking, am I okay? And the principal saying, I don't know. People are asking, is this okay? And the principal, I don't know. Let's wait for the district. And then they're not giving any direction on their own. So you are going to have to coach up. And you also may have to, if you have a principal who's not adept at this, who's not doing a good job at this, then this is an opportunity for you to step into that gap and do this in a way that doesn't undermine the principal, because you're not setting the direction, but you are translating that into answers to these questions. Okay. Let's see. Mark says, many teachers are exploring new platforms and new approaches because they feel they have more autonomy. That is true. There are some teachers who are loving this opportunity. What I'm recommending is that rather than having teachers just kind of randomly exploring platforms on their own, I'm recommending that when a teacher wants to explore a new platform, that you set up a mini pilot so that you give the teacher permission to pilot the platform with parameters. So, and we have a whole list of kind of like what you do to pilot, but you want to set people up to understand that you're not just experimenting and kind of going rogue. You can pilot this, and there's a reason why you're using platform. Because what I'm also seeing is that teachers are getting enamored with technology, and they're trying 3 and 4 different things, and it feels very random. And so it's more about the teachers playing around with platforms and getting kind of caught up in the bells and whistles of tech than it is about providing students meaningful learning experiences. So what I want teachers to do is I want you to play around with the technology within. But I want to make sure that the technology is serving our vision, mission, and core values. And so as teachers are opting to play around technology, I'm suggesting that they go through a formal pilot. Now, but I want to give the message that what you are doing right now is you are piloting it, and that we expect that you are sharing your results with the rest of us. And if it's something that works and it's helping you better achieve the vision, mission, and core values, then this is something that we can consider rolling out to the rest of our staff. If you don't do that, you're going to have a lot of people experimenting and playing. And again, you're going to have this unevenness of instruction. You may have people who get caught up in the technology but miss the point. So we're emphasizing to teachers right now that the technology, the learning is what's important, not the technology platform. And learning should be platform and context agnostic. What you are doing right now is really not changed from what you were doing in the classroom. Because if you were focused on true learning, if you were focused on the 7 principles of effective instruction, they are context agnostic. It doesn't matter whether I'm in a classroom face-to-face, whether we're on some sort of learning platform. So we want teachers to contextualize their experimentation to make sure that what they're doing is actually supporting the vision, mission, and core values that we have as a school, and it's supporting learning. Chris is saying right now our teachers are trying to find their groove with this new way of learning. Many of our teachers feel that they are overwhelmed with teaching in this new medium. Yes, we're seeing that a lot. And not only are we seeing teachers overwhelmed, we're seeing a lot of administrators who are overwhelmed as well. And the reason that we're feeling so overwhelmed is because without those parameters, it feels like we're in the wild, wild west where, you know, just anything and everything goes. When you give teachers parameters, it takes away the overwhelming. One of the things that we always say is structure gives you freedom. So that's like a mind stepsism. We say that all the time. When you put structures in place, it gives people a lot more psychological, emotional, and intellectual freedom. Because once I know the parameters, then I can play around in that space. But if I don't have those that structure, those guidelines, those parameters, it's really hard for me to play and still be able to get the answers to my big questions. I don't know whether or not I'm okay. I don't know if what I'm doing is okay or what my direction should be. And that creates the overwhelm. The more you can provide teachers with structure, the more freedom your teachers have to be able to kind of figure this out without getting that feeling of being overwhelmed. Okay, I'm finding, this is from Vince. I'm finding I'm coaching teachers to find their comfort and how to work at home. They are finding working at home is longer hours and more multitasking than the classroom. My coaching has been around setting schedules that work for them and their students, that's healthy and keeping teachers healthy and thriving and meeting students' needs. Yeah, I think that's really a good idea, Vince, is really to try to show teachers, again, that structure. The hard part about working from home, I think a lot of teachers are dealing with the stress right now by overworking, by staying busy all the time because they're so nervous. When you give teachers solid answers to these questions, it takes away some of that overwhelm and it helps teachers learn that they can shut off the computer at the end of the day and not, you know, penalize kids or leave kids in the lurch for doing that. So giving people that structure gives them a lot of freedom right now. And also making sure that what you're doing answers these four questions gives them a lot of freedom. Okay, Amanda's saying, this is part of a message for one of my instructors. To be honest, I'm having a very hard time adjusting to everything being online. I really miss face-to-face interaction with students and other people and having actual papers to grade instead of online pictures. I don't feel confident with the computer technology. I've always avoided taking or teaching online classes. I don't feel engaged with my classes. That, Amanda, that is so perfect because that teacher is asking all four questions in that response. And once we understand that teachers are asking these four questions, it gives us a way to respond to teachers. And it gives us a way to address their concerns without trying to have to solve the problems for them. We have to make sure, I don't want to rush into that teacher and say, well, all you have to do is, and I can get on a Zoom call and I can show you how to use the technology. And here, you just need to find, you know, like what we want to do is we want to fix that. But that's not what the teacher's asking. The teacher's not asking to be tutored on the technology. The teacher's not asking for you to fix it. The underlying question in that teacher's response is, am I okay? Right? Like right now, I am really feeling overwhelmed and I need to know that that's okay. So if I were working with that teacher, I would be responding by saying, this is really uncomfortable for all of us. Because that teacher needs to know that their feelings of overwhelm don't make them a bad person, don't make them a bad teacher, that their fears and their reticence for using technology doesn't make them a bad teacher. She wants to know that. And then secondly, is this okay? She doesn't feel confident in the online environment right now. So what can we do to give her confidence? What is something that we can, what is a platform or a process that we can show her that she can feel confident that she's still able to teach in the way that she's accustomed to teaching? And then what's my strategy? Giving her a strategy that allows her to be as connected as she can be without just trying to say, well, just here's a technology, figure it out. And then what should I do next? What action should she be taking right now that will address that? If you answer those four questions, you've answered this teacher's question. What a lot of teachers are experiencing right now, though, is they are experiencing pushback because of their reticence to use technology. They're, you know, you should have been using it for years, and now that we have to use it, you just have to get online, and you have to stop holding and clinging to the old ways. And, you know, we're kind of vilifying teachers for their reticence around using technology. If we can roll out technology implementation in a way that answers these four questions, we'll see a lot less reticence. So I'm so glad you shared that example, Amanda, because that's really important. And Rachel saying that you hear that from a lot of your teachers and they're really struggling with tech right now. They're having a hard time. And we have to find ways to support those teachers with struggling with tech. The way that I found that's been working the best is not to overwhelm them with the technology. Just really talk to them about how they taught when we were able to have face-to-face interactions and then help them find the technology that allows them to still get some of that. One of the things that I've been telling a lot of teachers too, and I'm gonna just see if I can find that slide, is that I'm really encouraging teachers to stop trying to approximate here. I don't know if you can see that. But instead of trying to approximate a face-to-face experience, we're looking at creating an entirely new kind of learning experience that doesn't rely on a context. So I'm challenging teachers right now to really think about that. What is it that you try to do in your classroom? And what is it that you're really trying to accomplish? And then once I have them get them talking about that, you know, I really try to interact with my kids. I want them to know I care about them. Or I really try to provide a rigorous learning experience. I want my kids thinking. Once you get to their instructional goals, then you can say, okay, well, we're not able to do that face-to-face right now, but let's talk about some ways you can still get that with the technology. If you can help them anchor in that, anchor in their outcome first, then you can introduce them to a technology that will deliver on that outcome. If we lead with technology rather than leading with the outcome, you're going to get a lot of pushback. You're going to get those feelings of overwhelm. You're going to get people who are freezing. But when you anchor in their outcome first and then talk about technology as a way to still be able to do that for their kids, all of a sudden you see a lot more openness to using that technology. A district lead systemic response is critical, Patty. Yeah. But what happens if you don't get it? A lot of districts right now are not providing really good direction, or they're taking so long that schools are grappling with issues right now and they're not getting that direction from their district. So ideally you want that. And there are some districts who are doing a good job with that. But when you don't have that, how do you still make sure that your people are okay? That's the question. And so a lot of it is really about not focusing on policy, but again, anchoring in the outcome. What is it that we are trying to do for our students? What kind of education have we been committed to providing for our students? And then getting people to get back to that. What's our vision, mission, and core values? Having people anchor in that is so important right now, because without that direction from your district, or without even knowing what's going to happen in the days ahead, they need something that they can rely on. And they need to know that the vision, mission, and core values that we embraced during great times is still relevant to us even now. I'm telling a lot of people that if you don't have a vision, mission, and core values that you can anchor in, then now's the time to be rewriting them and to create them. If you don't have that, you are adrift. I don't care how organized you are, your school is adrift, because remember, those if we can't answer those questions for people, we're adrift. All right, my teacher's doing a great job with their kids, but many of them are struggling with ways to give students feedback. Much harder right now. Any tips on that? Yes, I think that there are some really cool opportunities to give teachers feedback. Mindy, can you either unmute or let me know what grade level, so that I don't give you feedback strategies that may not work? You know, like I might give you some secondary ones, but you may be working with elementary kids. What grade level are you working with right now, Mindy?
It's upper elementary, so fourth and fifth grade mostly.
So fourth and fifth graders. Okay. So there's a lot you can do right now for feedback with students. That's really fun. If one of the things that I'm really enjoying right now is exploring asynchronous ways of giving both teachers and students feedback. And so one of the things that I'm playing around with is recording like a Loom video, or you can use Screencastify, and reading a student's paper or looking at a student's work and providing them with verbal feedback as I'm reading their work. So I can put their work on the screen. I can do a screencast recording where as I'm reading their work, so if there's a paper, I'm reading it, I can say, oh, that was great. That was a really strong topic sentence. Or, ooh, I don't really understand what you're saying there. Or I can go through their math problem and I can say, ooh, right here, I see a computational error. And so this, you know, and then I go back and talk through so the kids can see where they've made errors. Talking through that and recording that and then sending kids the recording is a fabulous way to not only maintain connection with the kids, but to also give kids much more meaningful and powerful feedback than they may have gotten if I were marking their papers. So that's one way. I can do that two ways. I can do that either through a screencast where I'm reading it, or there, like Microsoft Word and other, there's some other programs out there that allow me to put in a comment as I'm reading it, but it can be a verbal comment. So if I'm going through their paper, if they're submitting something to me in Word, I can insert a comment at a particular place in their work, and then I can talk, you know, record my voice giving them that feedback, and then I can send that paper back to them, and they click on those comments throughout their paper. So that's one way. When I was a teacher, I used to use something called color-coded feedback. So I created a rubric that, and it was a analytic rubric. So there were certain characteristics in the, I was a writing teacher, so there were certain characteristics in the writing that I was looking for, and then there was a 4-point kind of analytic rubric. And then each section of that rubric had a different color. So I never wrote comments on my kids' papers. What I would do is, as I was reading their papers, I would highlight the section that, like, so for instance, one of the pieces of the rubric was their thesis statement. That was blue. I still remember this. So when I read their thesis statement, I would highlight it in blue, and I would circle on the analytic rubric where their thesis statement fell on that rubric description. If yellow was transition, so if there was a place that was missing a transition, I would highlight in between two sentences in yellow, and then they knew, oh, right here is something I need a transition for. So giving kids color-coded feedback allows you to highlight things on the screen, have a rubric that's a standing rubric, so it's reinforcing things from one paper to the next. You can also do this with math. So in math, there are like 4 or 5 common errors. And so red might be a computational error. Blue might be a procedural error, like you didn't follow all the steps. Green might be you didn't reduce the number. And again, as you're looking at their work, you can highlight their work in those colors so that kids then can be constantly looking at the rubric and figuring out how to, using the rubric to kind of guide how they can improve their work without you kind of writing on papers. So one, voice email. 2, doing a document markup, perhaps using a color-coded rubric. The third way is to do conferences with kids, depending on what they're working on, and having individual conferences. So I love office hours with 15-minute appointments for kids to show up, and then we can do individual conferences where I can talk to them directly about their work. I think that being able to work remotely is actually opening up so many possibilities for giving kids feedback. So when teachers are struggling with feedback, it's 2 things they're struggling with. What do I give them feedback on? You know, especially if I can't rely on grades. And then what vehicle should I use to give them feedback? So we always start with, what do kids need, right? When you're giving people feedback, you have to understand what is the question that they're looking for. So when you do that, once you understand these are the questions I'm looking for, and the kids have some of the similar questions, then how can you give them the feedback that will answer the questions that kids have about their work? So that's really where I start. And then from there, there's so many possibilities. There's also some really great possibilities for peer feedback. So having kids, and if you're doing a Zoom meeting, pre-assigning kids to different breakout rooms and having them read each other's papers and give each other feedback while you just jump into the different rooms and kind of manage that. Having kids exchange work, using your same rubric to be able to give each other feedback. Giving kids an exemplar, like I used to give kids, if they were doing something, doing work, I would give them a bad exemplar. Like, you know, this, I would think about all the mistakes that my kids could possibly make on this assignment. And I would give them a completed assignment. And then we would play a game where we go in and try to give that assignment feedback so they could see. We'd mark it up. And then I'd give them the bad example, the marked up example, and then the corrected example, and let them now take a look at what they were working on and compare it to the bad example. Do you see some of these same mistakes? The corrected example, here's how you fix it. And the new example, so here's what your new piece should look like. So giving kids that kind of feedback doesn't mean I have to grade everything, but it's teaching them to be able to give themselves feedback. Is that helpful at all, Mindy, those 3 options, or is that not really serving you?
Yeah, that was super helpful. Thank you.
Okay. Now, on our website, mindstepsinc.com, we redid our website. I'm not sure. Mindy, if you want to send me a note, I'll put my email address in here. I know that we used to have some resources for teachers around some of the different ways that you could give kids feedback. And if you send me a note, I'll see if I can dig them up and share them with you, because they may, like for instance, what does color-coded feedback look like? I think there's a couple of articles that we had around that and how to do it. I can see if I can dig those up and send them to you if you think they'll be helpful for your teachers. Okay. Let's see. I don't want to skip a question, so I'm just making, okay, so next one was Deborah. My current school does not have an assisting administrator's position, but my principal has released some admin responsibilities to me in my new position, staff support, in order to analyze data and assist her with staff training and student intervention support implementation. How would you implement these connections with the teachers in a way that's supportive, that is supportive along the way, while, let's say, moving the needle forward at the same time? And then the seven principles. Okay, so the seven principles of effective instruction are, I outlined them in one of my early books called Never Work Harder Than Your Students and Other Principles of Great Teaching. So in that book, there are seven principles, and I wrote that book back in 2009, and I'm finding that what I said then is still true. When you get teachers focused on principles rather than strategies, then it doesn't matter what kids they teach, under what conditions they're teaching, the principles still are true. Right after I wrote that book, the Common Core came out and everybody was scrambling to rewrite their stuff. And I thought, oh shoot, am I gonna have to rewrite the seven principles? But when we looked at it, the seven principles still apply. Then, and a few years later, when people were like, forget Common Core, we're not doing it anymore. And some people were scrambling to rewrite, we said, doesn't need to be written, this principle still apply. So those principles are, number one, start where your students are. Make sure you understand what your students need before you start figuring out how to teach them. And that's social emotional needs, academic needs, understanding where your kids are. Number two, know where they're going. Have a good understanding of the standards you're trying to teach. So we have a strategy that we teach teachers that really is about, it's not I hate to say unpacking the standards because, you know, people still have PTSD around unpacking exercises, but it's really a very simple way to help teachers understand the thinking that's demanded by the standards so that they can design instruction that actually helps students meet those standards. So that's the second principle. The third principle is to support them along the way. And we teach that your students, your teachers should have proactive supports. So it's not just reactive, a kid fails, what do I do? Your support should be always anticipating where they are. The fourth one is use feedback to help you both get better. Quality versus quantity. I'm missing one. Start where students are, know where they're going, support them along the way, use feedback to help you both get better. Focus on quality versus quantity. I'm missing one, and I wrote them. And last one is never work harder than your students. But the idea is if we can teach teachers those seven principles, and those seven principles become the guidelines around instruction, I can leave teachers free to figure everything else out. I don't have to mandate all the things that they're doing along the way because I've given them the guardrails of the seven principles. And as long as what they're doing addresses those seven principles, then I don't care about your teaching style. You can have different styles. You can try different technology platforms as long as your instruction aligns with those seven principles. So I find that the principles give the teachers anchors. So when the district changes the curriculum and, oh, we're going to go from whole language to, you know, phonics, which a lot of districts are fighting about right now still, which is amazing to me. We're going to be doing a different kind of math program. Doesn't matter, because once teachers understand these principles, they're able to be a lot more agile in terms of playing around with the different technologies and the different learning approaches. Okay. Now, in terms of how would I implement these connections with teachers in a way that's supportive, I'm going to see if I can draw something. So tell me if you can see what I'm drawing on my screen. Okay, so I'm drawing a little man right now. Can you all just let me know, somebody unmute and let me know whether you can see that. Can you see that?
Yes, we sure can. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, so this is you and this is the teacher. The way that we normally give teachers feedback and support is I go in, I look at your classroom, I observe what you're doing, I decide what kind of feedback I'm gonna give you, and then I sit down and try to have a conversation with you where I convince you that this is you, this is what's happening in your classroom. And then the teacher responds to my feedback. They either say, thank you, that was so helpful, or you're a horrible person and how dare you. But what happens is the way that we normally provide feedback, support, even accountability and culture is really this kind of one-to-one thing. You, I hold you accountable. I go to you and say, you're struggling in this area, let me give you some support. Or you come to me and say, I need support. The challenge with that, especially right now in a remote learning environment when things are so fraught, is this interaction right here feels very, very personal. So what happens is it triggers fight, flight, or freeze. And we're seeing that a lot right now with our teachers. We're seeing some teachers resisting. We're seeing some teachers who are adapting okay, but we're, you know, they're still nervous. And then we're seeing some teachers who are freezing up. We're seeing some teachers who are hiding out. So the problem whenever you're trying to provide teachers with support is, as long as it's between me and you, there's a potential for. And so a lot of us are trying to navigate this feedback, support, accountability piece right now. We're trying to navigate it. We're trying to say, how do I hold them accountable while recognizing their trauma? It's the wrong question. And it's based on a paradigm of it's just me to you and you to me. Instead, what you want is you want up here a vision, a mission, and core values. And we're not talking about your typical vision statement, mission statement, core value statements. Those are garbage in a lot of cases. We're talking about a vision that answers the question, what are we building? A mission that answers the question, why is that important? And core values that define for everybody, what's our role if we're going to achieve this vision? If your vision, mission, and core values do that, then what I'm doing is, rather than giving you feedback, I am giving feedback that's focused on how are we achieving our vision, mission, and core values under these circumstances? And then what people hear is, they don't hear me, they hear, how am I doing with regard to achieving the vision, mission, and core values in these circumstances? When they respond, they are responding not to me, but to the vision, mission, and core values. And when I hear that, it tells me, what do I need to do to better support and reinforce that vision, mission, and core values? So when you have this up here and put this in between you and the other person, then it's a lot easier to provide them with the support, the accountability, and even the feedback and the culture that is really going to move our schools forward. When you don't have this here, if you don't anchor in that, then it just is me and the teacher, and it just depends on whether or not I have a good relationship with the teacher, whether the teacher's receptive. Vision, mission, and core values don't care about whether or not the teacher is receptive. They don't care about whether or not the teacher likes me. They only care, do my teachers buy into this? If they buy into that, then anytime I'm giving them feedback, they're pushing back. They're not pushing back against me. They're pushing back against our vision, mission, and core values. So we've got to make sure that we are anchoring in what is it that we're trying to do, not in how do I get you to get your classes online. Does that make sense for everybody?
Yeah,
I'm hoping it does. And I'm hoping, Deborah, that answers your questions. Okay, I see some of our teachers weekly in person by volunteering with them and our principal at the district school and helping them feed students. The conversations we have while helping usually have to deal with reassurance and validation. Yeah. All right, Justin, I see you jumping back in. Am I over time?
No, we're fine on time. And I know we need to wrap up at the top of the hour just to let everybody get on with their day and let you get back to your book deadline. But this is so powerful. I wonder if we could talk for just a moment about the Builders Lab process that has been the thing that people flock to work with you in person, you know, over the last couple of years, and then what you're doing online now. Because as you said, if these things are already in place, if the mission, the vision, the core values are already in place, they're our anchor, they're our reference point, they're what we send people back to, and we're not grasping at straws. But I know, you know, just looking at who is here, right at this very moment, I know we have a number of schools that were already planning to be in transition. I know we have the co-principals of a middle school that's dividing into two schools to kind of effectively open two new schools out of one. And maybe the runway that we thought we had for building the staff capacity and the readiness for those transitions is now not there. There is grieving that people are doing over the loss of the rest of the school year, not being able to see our students for the rest of the year or see our seniors ever again, perhaps. And I wonder what that process might look like a little bit. If you could take us just through that a little bit for people who are saying, you know, that would be great if we had the time to do that. That would have been great if we had known this was coming. So for organizations that would like to embark on that work for leaders that would like some support thinking through that work. I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about the sprint and about what you're doing with people online, and then what they can do with people, even if it is a while before we're able to all be back in person. Now, you know, I'm seeing a lot of conversation now about, you know, what if we have to start the year virtually as well? What if this isn't just about finishing out this school year online, but what if we're actually starting the next school year that way? How can we kind of get up to speed and do some of that work even while we are not together in person?
So the three things that we're doing right now to support administrators and instructional coaches and any kind of instructional lead, anybody who's in an instructional leadership position right now. The first is that we are immediately jumped in and started a pop-up group. It's a free pop-up group where people can come and get support around how do we navigate remote learning, how do we navigate what this crisis has done to schools. And in that pop-up group, every week we do a couple of things. The first thing that we've been doing, and we've done it for the last 4 weeks, and every time I think, okay, this is the last week, we still see a need, so we're just going to keep it going, is if you do not have a vision that you can anchor in right now, if your vision statement is blah, 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 and you can't even remember it, then we're having a what we call a workshop where you jump on with me, I talk to you about how to build a vision, and then you give me the vision, you share your vision for your school currently, and I help you create something that you can anchor in. So that workshop is not recorded because people are on live and they're talking about their vision and they're vulnerable and we don't want to record that, but we offer that every single week. So it's usually an hour, you jump on, there may be five or six other people on, and then they bring their vision statements and we work on them together. You can hear how we're working on other people's and you can use it to work on your own. Additionally, in that group, I have office hours every single week. So kind of an ask me anything kind of time. During those office hours, you don't have to stay the entire time. You jump on, ask your question, and then when you're done, you can leave or you can stick around and listen to what other people are saying. And then every week we also do a masterclass. And so those masterclasses have been things like, we did a masterclass where we talked through the seven principles and what that meant for what instruction should be looking like right now. We did a masterclass on something as simple as how do you set up a virtual master schedule? How do you set up a virtual teacher dashboard to stay on top of everything? So the masterclasses are really practical things, you know, trainings on how to do things right now to keep your classes, your school up. I don't know how much longer the pop-up group is going to be. We're going to be going at least through May, but you are welcome to join and you can watch the archive trainings of all the master classes. You can join us for office hours, or if you want work with your vision, you can join us for that. So that's absolutely free. The second thing that we have is we just started a sprint where we show you how to build all four systems. So during that sprint, 1 week, so we have a training every day, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. It's a 90-minute training. And during that 90-minute training, the first day we help you build your feedback systems. We help you create a system for giving teachers feedback. We show you how to set up your parent surveys and your student surveys. We create a feedback schedule. You know, we give you all of the resources you need to do that. We have a resource vault for each day with all of the resources. So they're already done for you. You're just customizing them for your school. The next day, we do the same thing with your support systems. The third day, we do it with your accountability systems. And the fourth day, we show you how to craft a really healthy online culture for your teachers, a remote culture for your teachers in your school. So we are finishing up a sprint this week. It's been really awesome. And we are probably going to run another sprint starting May 4th. And if you want more information about that, you go to mindstepsinc.com, and I'll put that in the here. And all of the information about the sprint or how to join the pop-up group is there as well. Now, if you want to go deep into this, we have something called Builders Lab. And Builders Lab is a 3-day intensive. And during Builders Lab, we help you create your entire vision, mission, and core values, or take what you have and make it more powerful for you. We show you how to set up feedback, support, accountability, and culture systems. Then we show you how to create a builder's blueprint, which helps you figure out what is the number one thing that we should be working on right now as a school, and what is our biggest obstacle to that, and how do we remove that obstacle. And then we show you how to develop a plan for how you're going to go back to your schools in the next 90 days and take that and remove that obstacle. And we not only do that, but we give you 90 days of follow-up support. So after you leave the intensive for the next 90 days, we help you actually implement the plan. And for me, that's probably the most powerful thing that you can do right now, is to be thinking about, okay, what is it that we're trying to accomplish as a school? What is our biggest obstacle? It's rarely what you think it is. And so we help you get to the root of it without doing, you know, one of those root cause exercises, but actually getting to the root of what's getting in your way. And we show you how to remove that so that you can actually achieve your vision, mission, and core values for your students. So if you want to come to Builders Lab, mindstepsync.com is where you need to go. And you can find out. We're having two this summer. One is going to be in Las Vegas, and the other one's going to be in the DC area. If for some reason we are unable to host Builders Lab live, we are now building an online experience. So the online experience is not going to be just like a Zoom call all day. We are building a really interactive, multimedia online experience so that you can have that same experience that you would get live, but being able to do it remotely. So we will have Builders Lab regardless. It'll be either in person or we'll be doing an online experience. All right. I didn't get to all of the questions, Justin, but I know that we have about 8 minutes left. Do I have time to answer any of these other questions, or do you need to wrap up?
Yeah, absolutely. As many questions as you want to go back and answer there, please feel free. And I'll just mention again, I did put the link to the pop-up group in the chat, and I definitely recommend that everyone get into that. And Robin, are you open to people reaching out about district level work as well? If they say, you know what, we really need to get on this as a district, can they arrange something with you remotely as well?
Absolutely. And I put my email address in the chat so that you can just reach out to me directly if you'd like to do some more district level work. We are doing a lot of work right now with districts around coaching administrators, helping them kind of figure this out. Justin, you mentioned that for a lot of schools, they're wondering whether or not we're going to even be able to get back together in the fall, especially because the epidemiologists right now are saying that the fall could be even worse than it is now. So we're helping a lot of people plan for what that's going to look like so that they can walk into the summer with a plan and give their people that reassurance that they need, that we, regardless of what's going to happen, we're still going to be able to provide quality educational experiences for our kids. All right, so listen, Amanda, I see your question here, and you have pre-K through age 22, but it's special education. And so participating in Zoom live classroom instruction, AM and PM, and you're not allowed to send pre-recorded work. A lot of us are doing Zoom because Zoom seems to be the easiest thing, but there are so many other platforms that allow you to provide students with the supports that they need that don't include Zoom. And there are also some platforms that allow even more interactivity than Zoom. So first thing I would do is, if Zoom is not suitable and you're not able to, and it's not allowing you to do what you need to do, to go back and sit down and say, what is it that we are trying to accomplish with our kids? And establish that first. Then find the technology to support what you're trying to do. And it may not be Zoom. I'm seeing a lot of people right now migrate over to WebEx. WebEx is a little harder than Zoom in terms of getting people on board, but WebEx has a lot more, Zoom's starting to add some of it, but WebEx has a lot more interactivity options than Zoom. I shouldn't say a lot more, some more interactivity options than Zoom. And so playing around and figuring out, what do I want to accomplish with people, and then playing around with the tech is the way to go. Deborah, if you email me, I can send you, and I don't know about notes. I don't have notes because a lot of this is what we were just kind of figuring out together. So I'm not sure what you mean by notes, but if you're looking for the color-coded rubric stuff and you want that, just send me an email to robin@mindstepsync.com. Let's see. How can schools do this mission, vision, values work remotely, is what Justin is asking. It's very easy. In fact, one of the things we've been talking about in the pop-up group is how you have that. There is a whole process for core values work. Here's my belief. I believe the vision belongs to the principal and the administration. The mission is shared, and the core values belong to the teachers, because the core values outline what's my role. The teachers have to establish that. So we have a core values exercise that I've outlined, and I have a free ebook on our website. If you go to mindstepsync.com, there's an ebook on how to overcome a toxic school culture, and it outlines step by step how you can establish real meaningful core values in your building. So not just respect and grit, but core values. Like our mindset, one of our mindset's core values is drama-free work environment. And we hold to that. Like if anything brings too much, non-negotiable for us. So how do you make your core values non-negotiable? If you want to look at that ebook, it lays out the process step by step, and it's easily transferred online. So at mindstepsinc.com, if you look at the top, there's an ebook there that says Overcome Toxic School Culture. Click on that and put your email address in, and we'll send that to you. All right. Justin, thanks for recommending the pop-up group. We're having a lot of fun over there. Okay, Deborah, we have inside of the, I don't have notes on that. I do have, there's a resource list of all these different ways that you can do that, that we share inside of the Sprint, so the principals have that available. And if you want to take a look at that, just send me an email, let me know what you need, and I'll make sure that you get it. All right, Justin, we are at 10:57 Eastern time, and so I'm going to turn things back over to you. But before I do, thank you all. You are asking such rich questions. And one of the things that we're doing, like if you have questions like this or additional questions, then join me in the pop-up group, because this is what office hours kind of feels like, where during office hours, people pop in, they ask questions, we get them resources that they need. And we do office hours at least once a week, sometimes twice a week. So you're able, and we do them at different times to meet your schedule. And I'm also trying to serve as much as I can inside of that pop-up group. So if you have the, if you haven't done so already, join us in the pop-up group, and you can get all your questions answered. You can get access to all these resources, and we are going to figure this out. I want to say this one last thing. When we came to this profession, we came to this profession because we wanted to make a difference. And now we have an opportunity to make an even bigger difference than we actually could ever imagine for ourselves. So let's not waste the opportunity that we have right now by getting caught up in the nitty-gritty stuff. Let's use this as an opportunity to unify our staff, to redesign how we give students instruction in a way that's going to actually meet their needs in an even greater way, and to maybe possibly transform education as we know it for the better. Let's keep our eye on that ball. Let's keep our focus on that we have a real opportunity here. And let's seize that opportunity so that our schools can thrive and our kids can thrive. All right, Justin, I'll turn it back over to you, and thank you for having me today.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. And I really appreciate your words of wisdom right there at the end. And I just have to say to everyone, anytime someone is wanting to do mission, vision, values, culture kinds of work in their school, every single time I'm going to point them to Dr. Jackson. So Robin, thank you so much for being here, and thank you for the work that you're doing to support schools in navigating some tricky transitions and some difficult circumstances that we find ourselves in. Thank you so much for your support and your empathy and your wisdom and your clarity. I think so much of what people need, as you said toward the beginning, is that clarity. And I think you have been providing that clarity just exceptionally well for leaders in our profession. And I often tell people Robin Jackson is the smartest person I have ever met, and that is not an exaggeration. So please join that pop-up group if you're not already in it.
Thank you. Thank you for having me today, and thank you for all of your questions. You all have been awesome.
All right. Thank you, everyone. Thanks for being here. And I will see you soon. We'll post the recording at the same link. So if you'd like to go back, if you didn't catch the whole thing, or if your audio cut out or you missed anything, just go and check that out. We'll try to get that up later today. And Robin, again, thank you so much. Take care.